This is Friday Forum. I'm Rachel Cobb for KGLP. 5 of the 10 winners of the 2016 New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards, which will be presented on November 16th at the Marriott Pyramid North in Albuquerque, have lived in Gallup, and in fact, 3 of those individuals are still living in Gallup. Later in this hour, I'll be speaking with Joe and Christine DiGregorio, as well as William and Eileen Garcia. I'm here with Mary Ellen Pellington, director of the Octavia Fellin Public Library. And I should note that the excuse for this meeting is to, first of all, congratulate you on being recognized as one of the 2016 recipients of the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Award. And I understand that they're going to have the recognition ball November 16th.
Right, right.
And I assume you're going?
Oh, yes. Yes, I will be attending the recognition and awards banquet in Albuquerque on November 16th. It starts at 6:30 p.m. It will be at the Pyramid Marriott Hotel. And all residents of Gallup, anybody that wants to come and have fun, there are three of us from Gallup that have won, and another person who used to live in Gallup. And the DiGregorios have won the Lifetime Achievement Distinguished Award, and that's very exciting.
It does cost money to go to this banquet, so if people want to go, they're going to need to call and make those reservations. The number I have here is 505-344-6177. You'd be speaking with or leaving a message for Jolu Otino. I understand that an Albuquerque Journal editorial cartoonist, John Trevor, will be delivering the keynote address. Now, you mentioned a former resident who's on this list.
William Garcia, who now, I believe, lives in Santa Fe.
So we have 3 current and 1 former resident out of 10 statewide recipients being honored for community service, for a variety of actions and activities over the course of many years, in some cases, that have benefited their communities, that have benefited the state. Now, for you, what does it mean that so many people from this list of 10 people are from the Gallup area?
I have been in Gallup for 8 years, and Gallup is a very special place. I've lived all over the country and in other parts of the world, and I have to say that I have learned so much here in Gallup. And one of the things about Gallup that I dearly love are the people here, because they really make a difference in small ways and in big ways. And it really has been my honor to serve the residents of Gallup and McKinley County. And I am really very humbled that I am also being honored with somebody like the DiGregorios, who do tremendous work here in the community and throughout the state.
And perhaps to be clear, I believe that it's both William Garcia and his wife Eileen who are being recognized.
Right.
So if Eileen is part of that power couple that maybe both resided in Gallup at one point, that's half of the 10 recipients being either currently in or formerly in the Gallup area.
Yes, it is, and I really hadn't thought about it that way, Rachel. I'm just so amazed that I'm actually receiving an award with such incredible people.
Now, as I understand it, the organization which chooses these recipients each year has on its committee the governor of New Mexico and a number of luminaries. They recognize work being done by government officials and others, but also community members.
Yes.
Now, you have made a name for yourself statewide and nationwide. Obviously, the library here has gotten on the map. What, to you, are the most important things that you have brought to Gallup?
I believe that what I have brought to Gallup is an enthusiasm, is a different way of looking at things, and building a library that's a place to learn, but to also have fun, and to be exciting, and to make sure that people know that the library is just not four walls, that we're out in the community all the time. We have many collaborations and partnerships, and we hope that the community is joining in with the fun that we are having here.
And the struggle continues to convince voters to support the building of a new library that will supplant the separate entities that comprise the main library here and the children's library.
Yes, that is true. I understand why there's a separate children's library at the time the community was not able to build a new library. I will say that having the children's department actually separate from the main library provides a number of problems and issues for us in terms of public service. We're unable to have any intergenerational interfacing, which is very, very important. Many of our programs could be for children and adults at the same time, but that's almost impossible, although we do have family programs. And both buildings are really antiquated in terms of where libraries are now with technology, and also being a community center. Libraries are turning into community centers, and we need desperately a new building to be able to fulfill what our mission is.
Of course, if you look back at the history going thousands of years ago of libraries, it is about the dissemination of knowledge. And your staff has continued that, accelerating that concept with computer with computer oriented technical classes, internet oriented classes, in basic dissemination of key information.
Yes, and freedom of information for all, so that people who want to know something but may not be able to afford a computer, and I need to remind everybody that something like Google is not always correct, and the library has vetted databases that you really should be using to make sure you have correct information. We give free computer classes, Rachel, as you mentioned. And we also acknowledge that people learn in very different ways. Reading a book, listening to a video, listening to a CD, using a computer. We also have a Navajo language room, which is open to all peoples. And we have very strong Native American collection, including DVDs, CDs, and books. And we run the gamut, the spectrum, really, in terms of what is subject matter we have, so that people can read in all different areas and then make up their own minds.
You do have staff. Obviously, you would benefit from having a bigger budget for staff, but how important are community members and volunteers to, say, the children's library and other activities?
I would like to say that the Octavia Feldman Library has an amazing staff, and nobody wins awards by themselves. I'm very fortunate to have had amazing people and mentors in my entire career, which spans 43 years. Doesn't seem possible. And a staff here that's very talented, very creative, and very motivated to service. And that's more than any library director could ask for. In terms of volunteers, for large programs, for example, we're having our Halloween carnival on Saturday, we do need people that help us do face painting or run some of the games and make sure that the kids are happy and the parents that are coming are happy and really having a good time. And also our summer reading carnival, which this year we're going to co-sponsor with the city rec department, and it will be at the end of the summer. We also use volunteers for that to help with the games, blow up balloons, make sure people are getting the awards they should get. So it's really for our bigger functions. Now, we also collaborate and partner with many, many community groups. For example, Gallup Arts, Main Street, Arts and Cultural District. We've worked with Senior RSVP Program. People call us, groups call us and want to know if there's ways that the library can participate. So I would encourage any group or organization that would like to explore how the library might assist them to please give us a phone call.
And that number? I can hold while you look up that number.
Okay, thank you.
Again, one of the advantages of recording.
It is. Thank you. The library's phone number is 505-863-1291. And if you would like to talk to me, please ask for Mary Ellen, and they will know who that is.
Mary Ellen, you did mention collaborations that the library is involved with, and in fact you personally have served on boards, advisory committees, work groups connected with these organizations.
Yes, I have. And first, as a citizen of Gallup, I feel it's my responsibility certainly to participate and help groups to make Gallup a more exciting place to live. And there's a lot of opportunities for people, and I've been very fortunate to stumble on those opportunities. But more importantly, as the library director, the library needs to participate in community groups and in community activities and be at festivals, have tables at Veterans Affairs. Make sure that we're just as involved as everybody else, because the library, as I have been told by other people here, is the heart of the community, and we cannot be the heart of the community unless we're out there being part of the community.
What do you think will be key in convincing voters to finally support the building of a new library and to develop these resources?
You know, I really don't have an answer for that, but I can say the more people that use the library that have come from other places are really amazed at what we don't have. I wonder sometimes if the community would visit other places and see what the options are and opportunities are, that might be something that would help. I really worry about our children. Library services, I believe, run on our children's program. We have a marvelous children's program with what we have, but I do know that our children are not getting the same kind of public library services that many children in other communities in other states have the opportunity to experience. In terms of the community, I believe that it is, of course, the community's decision on what kind of library service they want. I, of course, feel that they could have so much more, and I'd like to talk to people if they'd like to stop in and have a conversation about it.
I think that concept of the library as a community center is something that could be explored in much greater detail. I think that's a strong discussion to have. With regard to collaborations, has Octavia Fillion Public Library had any direct or indirect collaborations, say, with the State Bookmobile Program?
The State Bookmobile Program is operated, of course, by the State Library, and it's in four different areas of McKinley County. It's not in Gallup. But yes, we're very close to the State Library, and we're very close with all the services they provide. I have gone out on some of the bookmobile runs, and that's kind of exciting. In Tampa, Florida, I was the head of special services, and one of my department's responsibility was bookmobile service out into the county. So it's like getting on the road again for me. The State Library also has a outstanding program for the blind and physically handicapped, Talking Books. It's a national program. It comes from the National Library Service in D.C., started in the 1930s, and I would encourage anybody who has difficulty reading, holding a book, hard of hearing, to please take a look at Talking Book Service. It's free. The Talking Books includes basically every title you can think of. Also has a large periodical collection that, again, you get the machines and they're yours for free, and the material goes back and forth for free matter. And if you'd like to have me work with you on how to get that service, again, please do, because I used to be a talking book librarian. I'm giving plugs for all my old jobs.
That's acceptable. How has the response been to some of the new programs, state programs and local programs, such as e-book?
Our e-book use is just going up and up and up, and we're part of a statewide consortium of 16 medium-sized libraries, so that not only the books we purchase are available to the public, but all of the e-books that are purchased by the other 16 libraries are also available. So there's a massive amount of materials that people can check out and use. And when your time is up, you really don't get a library fine. The book just disappears, which, you know, might be good or bad. I'm not sure. We are very, very pleased with the free computer service that we have for people both coming in and using our computers, but also our ability to train. We train on multiple different kinds of programs, from basic computers up through PowerPoint 2 into Facebook, how to get a job using computers, and small business access on computers. We have worked with the Humanities Council, New Mexico Humanities Council, a great deal, and have utilized many of their services. Most recently, we were one of six libraries throughout the state that was selected to receive the 100 Years of the Pulitzer Prize grant, and that was an amazingly successful program here. The book discussions were very well attended, and some very interesting comments and ideas grew out of those book discussions. So we have great relationships with many organizations throughout the state. And nationally also, I'm very active in the American Library Association. I'm on the national board of the Freedom to Read Association, and all of those contacts and involvements help the Gallup Library and also the city of Gallup to get not only state recognition but national recognition.
Now, a little segue here. If you were not working professionally in this field and you had a lot more free time, how would you spend that time? What are the passions that you bring into your personal life that you might explore further, either now or later?
You know, I love storytelling. And when I was getting my master's in library science, I had a marvelous storytelling professor. And so one of the things that goes around in my head after I leave library land, per se, is to become a professional storyteller. And my ideas are to wear aprons that have different pockets, like the book Katie No Pocket, if you all remember that as a child, but to go from library to library and be known as the Story Hour Lady or Storytelling Lady. And summer reading programs, of course, have people that do that. But I think I have I think I have a flair for excitement, and that I always want to participate in libraries somehow. That would be wonderful to work with kids. I also am very involved in black and white photography. I travel extensively, so I would, of course, travel more. And I like to take portraits of people in their workplaces and in their play places.
Well, it sounds like we might hear a lot from Mary Ellen Pellington in the coming years, whatever you're doing.
Well, what I hope is that I have made a difference in people's lives, that libraries, of course, make a great difference in people's lives, and that whether or not you hear from me again, that everybody participates in building bigger and better libraries, supporting their libraries, and realizing that libraries provide tremendous options, and everything is free. Library services are always free. The services we give, the programs we give, there's no charge for anything.
You know, if I look back to my youth, in my early years in college, I spent hundreds of hours in the science library at the University of Kansas, not for classes, but because I was curious about things, and I just love that experience of being able to find something that you've wondered about and be able to sit quietly with nobody bothering you and be able to look at that for hours.
Yes, that's very much of an interest to me as a child. However, grew up in a very small town in New Jersey, and the library was in the central part of town. I remember when I got my first library card, I was with another friend. We were in first grade, and you could walk to and from the library very easily. Now, as you grow older, you find out the library is a great place, like to meet your boyfriend without your parents knowing, or to smoke cigarettes behind the building. And then you grow out of that phase and, you know, through college and graduate school, learn how meaningful the research libraries are. And then they become fun again, I think.
You know, you're, of course, familiar with the legacy that Activia Follin is known for. Obviously, this library is named after Octavia, but you have built your own legacy and are continuing to do so. So, when the time comes, do you anticipate that you might have a library or an institution named after you?
Well, I would hope not. You know, whether it is or it isn't, it is a lot to live up to. And for the library director coming after me, they would certainly build their own legacy also, so that the building and the services and the life that's perpetuated in the libraries continues. I will say I was very fortunate to know Octavia. And before I decided to take the position here, I had a long conversation with Octavia about Gallup, about the library. We shared a great many ideas. We have had the same type of library philosophy, and where we differed, we understood that we just differed. I tried never to make a big change in the library without first letting Octavia know. And she didn't always think it was the right change, but I never wanted her to be blindsided.
Well, that's something you don't often hear, that someone actually has a emeritus persona to call upon.
And I learned a great deal about Gallup and the history of Gallup. Octavia was here quite a bit doing research, writing materials on the history of Gallup. Also, I learned a great deal about our WPA art. I really believe I wouldn't have the reverence or the knowledge of the incredible collection we have if it wasn't for Octavia taking time to go through the history of the art with me, how she gathered the art, and to really treasure these pieces as a part of Gallup and McKinley County's past, present, and future.
Let me read the blurb from the press release for the 2016 New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards. Mary Ellen Pellington of Gallup was instrumental in earning that city's Octavia Follin Library a National Medal of Excellence, a New Mexico first, presented at the White House by First Lady Michelle Obama. Pellington, the library director, is credited with expanding services throughout the community and mentoring staff to continue their education, and also establishing a Navajo language room and strong Native American film and music collections. So, visiting the White House, what was that like for you?
It was such a professional high. I do not know how to describe it. I wish that the entire staff could have gone, because obviously we all work together. The Medal for Excellence is the highest award that a library can receive in the country. We got to see rooms in the White House that you only saw maybe when Jackie Kennedy gave her tour of the White House. There was a wonderful reception, and of course, to meet the First Lady and to receive an award from the First Lady was just amazing. And I'm very happy that my board president was able to go. We had a few other friends that were able to go, and they had asked us to bring a patron. And so Maria Ruiz, who people may or may not know, was our guest from the community. And I think we all were just in awe of where we were and what libraries mean to this country. We are really the essence of free library service in the world. And that is very significant.
Any closing comments, Mary Ellen, to share with KGLP listeners?
Come on down and see us. We do have a major Native American Heritage program planned for November. We have a Vietnam pilot who helped POWs and children and nuns escape from the Viet Cong for Veterans Day, which is our program is on November 10th. And stop in. You never know what you find here. We have something called a secret soiree where we invite musicians or authors to just sit and basically perform in our circulation area. But you never know who's going to be there and when they're going to be there. And if anybody has a special talent or would like to share a special craft, again, please contact me, because we're always looking for communities, members to share what they know how to do with other community members.
I've been speaking with Mary Ellen Pellington, director of the Octavia Follin Public Library in Gallup, New Mexico, and one of 10 recipients of the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Award. If you are interested in attending the ball, where three current residents of Gallup and two additional former residents of Gallup, half of the award recipients will be honored, then you can call to make reservations with Jolu Otino by calling 505-344-6177. The number for more information, 505-344-6177. And if you'd like to find out more about how to get involved with the local library and what the services are and what the library can do for you and what you can do for the library, to paraphrase JFK, the number, 505-863-1291. You can also visit online at galliplibrary.org. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Mary.
Thank you for having me, Rachel. It's my pleasure.
You are listening to Friday Forum. I'm Rachel Cobb for KGLP. In a while, I'll be speaking with William and Eileen Garcia, who will also be presented with the 2016 New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards November 16th at the Marriott Pyramid North in Albuquerque. I am here with Joe and Christine DeGregorio, Gallup area couple, who have been recognized as 2016 winners of the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards. This came as a result of work that Christine and Joe have done in the Gallup area. They founded an organization to find jobs for developmentally disabled and created a graduation and citizenship program for local high school students, among many other endeavors. They started and funded Gallup Reads. Joe and Christine have 4 sons and 9 grandchildren. That's according to the press release. There were 10 recipients of the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards this year who will be recognized November 16th at the Marriott Pyramid North in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Anyone who wishes to attend in support of Joe, Christine, Marion Pellington, or even former residents Eileen Garcia and William Garcia, or any of the 10 recipients, can schedule or reserve tickets by calling Joe Lou Otino at 505-344-6177, or at least that's the number for more information, 505-344-6177. On November 16th at this awards banquet for the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards, Albuquerque Journal editorial cartoonist John Trevor is to deliver the keynote address. Now, all of that said, what do you think of the fact that half of the recipients this year for the state of New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards are either currently living in Gallup or are former residents of Gallup? Joe?
We're extremely proud of that fact. I happened to sit on the board, and I had nominated Mary Ellen for the great work she's done with our library. I think our library is a real gem, not only for Gallup, but for the entire state. And she was recognized by this with a very high honor at the White House a couple of years ago. So we're very proud of what she's done. She's carried on the tradition that was set by Octavia Flynn, who was our librarian director for many, many years. And I know growing up here, and I spoke to Bill Garcia about this, anybody that grew up in Gallup had a following of Octavia because she made sure we knew, learned how to read. And she did the same thing with our kids. And she was very conscientious about that. So when I made the nomination for Mary Ellen, then I was asked to basically leave the room. And I came back and they said, we're not only chose Mary Ellen, but we're also choosing you and Christine to receive the Lifetime Award, which we're truly honored. And I say it's really something when you see half of the recipients are from Gallup. And what's amazing, Rachel, we were at a board meeting yesterday, and of the 6 people at the table, 5 of them had ties to Gallup, had been here one way or another, either lived here or their parents worked here or did something to Gallup. So with that in mind, you know, we have been part of the community. My parents came here as immigrants. My father opened a grocery store on Cole Avenue, which is now the present Jerry's Cafe. That was his first grocery store. He was 25 years old. He spoke very little English. And the store was called The California Market because he would go to California to get supplies and foods for the immigrants that were here, the Italians, Slavic, and other ethnic groups that were here. So that he had a vision for Gallup, and his vision was the stores to grow with Gallup. And, you know, when I came back in 1961 and joined him, and we built a business, and we were very fortunate that we built the stores into a 4 supermarket operation with 250 employees. We learned at an early age to give back. My family believed in it, and my dad was always proud to be an American. He would say, only in America could I accomplish this. So with that in mind, we were active in the Chamber of Commerce. In fact, I think it's safe for me to say that we're the only family that had three generations as presidents of the Chamber of Commerce in Gallup. My father was, I was, and so was our oldest son. And we were involved in Boy Scouts. Every fundraiser that ever happened, somebody came to us. And then I married Christine in 1964. She came here as a school teacher, and her parents were also, her father was an immigrant in North Dakota. And they had a strong work ethic, and she brought her side of the family, the German side of the family, to the table. So between the Germans and the Italians, and you mentioned something in your reading there that when we had our supermarkets, she instituted a program for teaching the students, the employees, how to read and write, because that's unfortunately one of the situations we have here is poor learning habits, and she dealt with that, and we were very proud to say that several of our students, several of our employees went on to get their GEDs, and I think we had 12 of them, 12 or 15, became American citizens while they worked for us.
It's very impressive, and I don't think it escapes any of our listeners' attention that there are some similarities between the work of the library and the work that you, Joe, and you, Christine, have put in to help with improving literacy, with working with students to increase the graduation rate, develop citizenship, et cetera, et cetera. As a school teacher, Christine, how does being recognized for your work in literacy, in increasing graduation rates and citizenship programs, how does that feel to you?
Well, I'm very glad to be able to do something about it. I taught just a few years, and then I did the human resources at the stores, and I guess I accomplished more through that. Well, I also did in my teaching. I taught at the high school, English and PE, and at the mid school, language arts. But anyway, I think it's extremely important. It helped all of our associates in the store produce better because we had two classes. We had one class in English. The branch college helped me with an instructor and books. And the other class was in Spanish, and Sister Magda taught it for us, and both groups did extremely well. It was voluntary for them to participate. We tested everybody and recommended that below a certain score you go to the class, and we had about 35 in the English class and about 15 in the Spanish class. And they did extremely well. They were proud of how they did, and we were proud of them. And as a result, they did much better in the stores.
And as essentially the HR director for California Markets and the Lowe's stores, you were also essentially the education director for the employees.
I guess so.
That's a good point, Rachel.
Yeah.
So you never really left the field of education. You just folded it into your other responsibilities.
In a way, I did. I also did go over to the university and take classes in human resources.
With all of the programs that you have been involved in starting, including Gallup Reads, can you think of any students or individuals that stand out in your memory as someone whose help really made a difference to them?
It's ironic you ask that question, Rachel, because just yesterday I got a letter from one of our high school students who now lives in Texas, and she is a vice president with Chase Bank. And she wrote me a letter, and the letter basically said that she had read about the award, and she said, I'm so proud of you, and it's well-deserved because you earned your stripes hiring 80% of the students from Gallup High School, plus they either worked at the store or they babysat for you with your four boys. And she said the worth ethic that I learned in taking care of customers and the responsibilities you trusted on us, this young lady had keys to the store. She actually, but she pointed out something to me that it was a value of working with people, and so she saw how important it was for them to be able to check out and receive the right pricing and specials. And in those days, in the 70s and 80s, we had something called S&H Green Stamps. And we had on Wednesday, it was a double S&H Green Stamp Day. So a lot of the older people would come on shop on Wednesdays just for that purpose. And this girl went out to point out to me how important that was for her. And she took the lessons she learned working here to work with her at Chase. And she's, as I said, done very well.
Have you, in cases where you've heard of how students have gone on with their lives to do, heard of any of your employees or students who have gone on to mentor other students or youth?
I think very much so. I think that what happens is contagious. That once they see the way they were treated here, and they carry that onto their workplace too. And just the other day we ran into someone at a restaurant who end up opening his own business. And he mentioned the same thing. He said the same things he learned here, starting out working here at 16 years old and worked all the way through high school and college. He took those same worth ethic and principles that we had instilled in him about honesty and dependability and the importance of education. He took those to his workforce.
Christine, for you, did you feel being a teacher yourself and being so involved in promoting education and learning for the employees of the California Markets and Lowe's that it was important for your own children, your own family, pursue their education?
It was extremely important. And all four of our sons did well in the schools here and went on to higher education and did well. And they got their BA, but we also have two PhDs. And I was very proud of them. They did well in the schools here, and we encouraged them. And they did well later on.
How important do you think your example of promoting education and learning by the employees of the family company was to motivating your children to go to school?
Well, I think it was important, but it was also important that we had both completed college and were doing well. And it was extremely important at our house that they do well, and they did. They also worked in the business.
And her father was a doctor and was a graduate of medical school, and we had a strong worth ethic and strong education. My parents were immigrants, and they, as you see on the wall there, They came here from Italy in the early 30s. Actually, my father came in the 20s during the Depression. But education was just pounded into us. My mother learned to read. We grew up on the north side of Gallup on Princeton Avenue. And my mother basically learned to read a book, the Dick and Jane books, as we called them in those days. I don't think they have the Dick and Jane anymore, do they? but anyway, I would bring home the books, and that's where she would learn to read. And Christine had a grandmother who was, I remember when I first met her, I went up to meet the family, and she was very, very stressed the fact that she was American. And she wanted everybody to know that, and she really believed in education, and I think it's contagious. What the kids see, that the family life, and we kept our culture, we kept our traditional Italian culture, and Christine did with her family too, but we also stressed the being independent, and learning to think, and you have an intellect, and use that intellect to advance yourself.
Which brings up this also, Christine, with your family. What were the important considerations with your family with regard to education? Your father was a medical doctor. Now, was it your father and mother who had immigrated, or was it their parents?
My father's family immigrated, and my father learned English when he went away. He grew up on they homesteaded near Golden Valley, North Dakota, and he went away to high school and learned English, and then they fed cattle and raised wheat, and he went to Chicago with the cattle and got a scholarship to the University of Chicago, and then he went from there to Harvard and specialized in surgery and did a lot of cancer research. But education was extremely important to him, and it also was to my mother. She went to Carleton, where I later went, and she went on a scholarship and went on and worked in a medical clinic later on, and it was extremely important. And then it's been important to me and Joe throughout our life and our bringing up of our children. And
you have received, both of you have received attention from the local community for your work in the area, but how does the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Award rank in the kinds of recognition that you have been exposed to?
Well, my recognition was probably for Game and Fish. I was on the commission from 82 through 91 and worked hard at it. Actually, I went back to school to learn more about it and set the laws for hunting and fishing and built fish hatcheries and did things like that those 9 years through 3 governors. And my recognition was primarily for that.
And how does the New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Award feel to you after your experience with the Fish and Game Commission?
Well, I think it's great. My work with the Game and Fish isn't really real current, but Joe's done a lot of things much more current than I have. I did the programs with the stores, and the last couple of years.
She's been very humbled, Rachel. This is not a one-way street. She's been my strength and my support through. I may get the credit for many things, but without her, none of these things could not get done. We could not have built a business that employed 250 associates. And I'll give you just a quick story. When we opened our store in Winter Rock, Arizona, we hired 40 associates. And she did the interview. It took her 3 days of interviewing to hire those people. And when the groundbreaking, the president of the Navajo Nation at the time, we said we were proud to bring 40 jobs to the area. And he made a comment that we did not bring 40 jobs. We brought help and support for 200 people, because for everyone we hired, there was four other people there five other people that benefited from that job. So those are the things that we're extremely proud of. This particular award that we're getting next month is very high on the list, but I'm just as proud of being honored as a Boy Scout leader. I was when our four boys were growing up, I was administrative assistant for the Boy Scout, local Boy Scout area, any youth group. I think the pride you get out of this is when you see what you've accomplished, but someone else has taken what you've tried to teach them to a new level. And that's what's really satisfying.
I have some notes here in addition to the press release. And one of the things that catches my eye, and I'm quoting here, the DeGregorios enjoy inculcating a sense of philanthropy in their grandchildren. Under the auspices of the Albuquerque Community Foundation, they established an endowment fund. Once annually, each of their grandchildren is given a set amount to donate to a charity of their choice, following careful research and thoughtful consideration. Now, that caught my eye.
That's interesting. We were at a seminar 10 years ago or so, and someone was talking about philanthropy. So on the way home, we kicked this around. So every September, we send each one of the 9 grandkids a check. And the letter basically states, this money is for you to use in donating to some cause. You have 100% control of what you use this money for. You can talk to your parents, you can get advice, but you can't go out and buy video games with this, or you can't buy a new pair of shoes or something like this. This is for you to use in charity. So the way it's evolved over the years is really interesting. Two of the kids right away within the second year called, and they started doing their own research, and there's a vehicle out there called Charity Navigator, which they did the research on, and they said, do you realize how much overhead some of these charities take? And I said, yes. So it's... We have kids on the East Coast and kids on the West Coast and kids in New Mexico. So these kids would, for example, the East Coast kids, they did a project where they took single family parents at Christmas that would send a list of needs. And my grandson called one day and he says, I got this letter from this boy that wants socks for Christmas. He says, can you imagine wanting socks for Christmas? I said, what does that tell you? He says, well, they don't have much, do they? And then the East Coast kids, or the West Coast kids, they're involved in protecting the environment. They also set up their own scholarship. Kids in Chicago, our granddaughter in Chicago and her brother start funding something called Kiva. And so they make microloans all around the world to a weaver in Colombia, $50, or someone in Bangladesh. And 3 years ago, the family traveled to Peru, and they met one of the weavers that they had lent the money to. And these people, as they progress in their own business, they then repay the notes. The only one instance we had one granddaughter who wanted to make and we weren't particularly fond of the charity because we knew something about it, and And but we didn't want to overstep our bounds because we said they have to make the decision. So I told her, I said, research it a little bit more. And she, sure enough, she did, and she came back and says, I don't think I'm going to use that. So that was basically what, and we've continued that. And they do things like Wounded Warriors. It's not Wounded Warriors itself, but it's very similar to that. And it's a family. They take in wounded veterans that come back with severe injuries, and they set up a hunting camp for these people, both men and women, and it's in Arkansas. So they help fund that program. So it's really interesting. So each one of these, so I'm fast forward now. Our oldest grandson now is working for a large bank in North Carolina. So last year, on his own, he went out and bought 25 gift certificates, gift cards, for needy families. And he went back to the office and was sitting around the break room telling them about this. And the president of the bank overheard him. And he said, "You did what?" And he said, "I bought these 25." He said, "Where'd you get this idea?" He said, "Well, we've been doing it to my grandfather." And so the president says, "You're not going to show me up." He went out and bought 50 gift cards. So it's interesting how you set an example is what you try to do, Rachel, and they pick it up from there. That's probably that, and along with our work with the what was originally called MASH, and Disability Services here, over 10 years we raised over $300,000 for them. To help the adults who are getting back in the workforce, and some of the people we helped 15 years ago are still working at Lowe's now, and we're very proud of that when we see them, and they're very thankful for having that opportunity. I don't think this would have been as big an impact if we weren't in a place like Gallup, New Mexico, because when you're in Gallup, people appreciate this more. They recognize you more for it, and they see what you're doing, and it's a big factor.
Well, while we're on the subject of awards, one of the things, Christine, that you didn't mention, I don't think, when you were talking about the New Mexico State Game and Fish Department, is that you were the first woman appointed to the department.
Yes, I was.
And in fact, I don't know if it was directly connected with your work on the Game and Fish Commission, but you are a recipient of the New Mexico Outstanding Women Award.
Yeah, that certainly was part of it.
Also, among former recognition for Joe and Christine, the National Jewish Health Spirit of Achievement Award and the New Mexico Governor's Distinguished Public Service Awards, which you're receiving on November 16th. That's pretty amazing.
Not bad for small-time kids.
Now, let me just ask, off the top of my head, the De Gregorios are in Gallup, New Mexico. How did the De Gregorios come to be in Gallup, New Mexico? What was the attraction?
Well, that was through my family. In the early 20s, my grandfather came to America in the late 1880s, and I migrated from Italy, as many of the Italians did at that time, and they ended up coming here because of work and the opportunities. We grew up in a very small community. There's a picture of our town in Italy. It's called Canzano. Almost a third of the Italians in Gallup are from that village. That village only has 200 people left in it now. But they migrated to the United States for work. So as they came to the United States, other families would follow. So my family first came. My father first came to New York. And in fact, he told us stories how he helped work on the Brooklyn Bridge when they were building the tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel. As work opened to the west, the coal mining was out here. So you had both Slavics, Italians, Hispanic. They're all worked in the mines. So they came and they worked in the coal mines in Colorado, around Trinidad, and different areas. Then they moved over to New Mexico side to Raton and Dawson. And then gradually they moved into the Gallup area. So as the mines opened in Gallup, I think at one time, Rachel, we had like 12 mines here. These are all underground mines now, not open mines like they have now. Anyway, so that's what brought the miners here to work. And so my dad's first job was at the mines. He worked at the mines in Gumerco. And 1938, when I was born, we were living in Gumerco. And then we moved into town when he opened his first little grocery store.
And was that a natural progression? Obviously, you had to get food somehow as a family. And did he see that there was a need for more service of that kind, and he saw an opportunity?
He did. In fact, I still have some of his ledgers here. And they're handwritten in pencil. And one of the things that he did was offer the miners credit. And there's still some families that are still here that still remember their families being able to have credit at our stores because they didn't have the money. And then when they were able to repay their debt, they did. And I think this is all part of the progression of the idea of giving and giving back, that you have a great opportunity to be in America and take this opportunity and pass it on to others.
Well, that's a big part of why I believe that you, Joe, and you, Christine, the DeGregorios of Gallup, are receiving the 2016 New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Award. That's on November 16th at the Marriott Pyramid North in Albuquerque. And for anyone who would like to come and support you as you receive that award, you can call 505-344-6177 for more information. That's a call to Joe Lou Otino at 505-344-6177. The tickets are not free.
I might add one of our local entrepreneurs that have a hotel. His name is Prakash Sundram. He has offered some special rates at one of his hotels in Albuquerque that night. And Mary Ellen Pennington has the information on that. It's a special rate of, I think, $79. And it's right near the pyramid. So if somebody wants to come over and do it, that was very nice of Prakash to offer that to us.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else that you, Joe, or you, Christine, might like to share with KGLP's listeners about what Gallup means to you, about the significance of this award? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, I just want to add what a treasure you are in helping bring public radio to a new level in Gallup. I mean, we wake up with it every morning. I love every part of public radio, and I thank you for what you've done to help make Gallup a better place.
This is Friday Forum. I'm Rachel Kopp for KGLP. William and Eileen Garcia will also be presented with the 2016 New Mexico Distinguished Public Service Awards November 16th at the Marriott Pyramid North in Albuquerque. You and Eileen, even though you're in Santa Fe now, are Gallup people, as was your brother, Philip.
Well, this is my hometown, and I'm very honored and pleased that we've been selected. I am particularly pleased that we're honored as a team. You know, Eileen, when we were married in our early years, we lived here in Gallup when I worked for the telephone company. I was manager, and Eileen taught in the Gallup schools and just loved it. So she considers herself to be part of Gallup as well, and this is a special place for us. Always has been as your hometown, and special lessons were learned here just by growing up in Gallup and living here. So we appreciate very much what the city's done, the mayor and everybody, in dedicating this to my brother.
You and Philip have both contributed greatly to your communities throughout your lives. Obviously, Philip is being honored today
with the Philip Garcia Court.
Right.
For you and Philip growing up, what were the things about Gallup that you really appreciated, that you really supported?
Well, one thing is the diversity here in Gallup and the many cultures that exist here, and you just kind of grow up learning to be very tolerant and accepting, and that's one of the great lessons that I learned as I moved through life. Two other factors, of course, our parents were terrific in establishing values, and that was all reinforced with the Franciscans who we were educated by at Cathedral High School.
For you, how significant is it that half of the 10 nominees being recognized this year at the November 16th Awards are essentially Gallupians?
I think it's a reflection of Gallup and its values and the wonderful people that live here and the values that they utilize in terms of promoting their own communities wherever they are. So I think it's indicative of the pride and spirit of Gallup.
Eileen, I was just speaking with Bill about the significance of the 10 honorees who are going to be at the banquet on November 16th being comprised of 5 people who either are in or come from Gallup. For you.
Isn't that incredible? That's wonderful. And we've known them for, not all 5, but we've known some of them before that. And I was really encouraged to see the librarian who worked with Octavia Filin, and we were fortunate enough to meet her and know her. And, of course, the DiGregorios. And I was real lucky to marry my husband Bill, met him at Highlands, and when he was manager here of the phone company, and I was again fortunate to get a job working for the Gallup Public Schools. I taught at JFK with Herbert Walsh was the principal.
You have that in common with Christine DiGregorio. She came here to teach.
Yes, and she taught at JFK, I think in 1988, she said. So when we first moved to Gallup, I thought, well, I don't know. And when we lived here, this is the friendliest town that we have lived in. We've lived in lots of towns. And the people are just wonderful. I thoroughly enjoyed living in Gallup and working here. And, of course, my in-laws, terrific.
Growing up, how important was your family, your parents, in moving you towards education and towards teaching?
Well, my grandmother was a teacher. My father was a teacher. And so it was just something, you know, we always helped other people, and I always enjoyed working and helping other people, so that's why I got into education.
Well, you are being honored on November 16th, along with Bill and Mary Ellen Pellington of the library and the DiGregorios. For you, what has been the instilling factor in your community service over the years?
The instilling factor in my community service has been in education. I've been a member of the Golden Apple Foundation for 17 years, and last year we honored one of your teachers, and we've honored, I think, 2 others from the elementary, and we were visiting one yesterday that has been nominated. So hey, Jack, I'm focused on education, and then I was also a public education commissioner that authorized charter schools. So my thought is education is number one, and so the volunteer work I do is in that area.
And lastly, you're here today with Bill at the commemoration of the Philip Garcia Court. For you, what was important about your connections with Phil over the years?
Phil was a wonderful brother-in-law, and we would walk together. Later on in life, we'd walk, and we just had a lot of good memories of visiting together. And his music, he knew everything, who the artists were, what they did, what their life was. He was always very good to our son, to our whole family, just a wonderful person.
Well, thank you so much, Eileen.
Thank you for doing this.
Mayor, what was the importance of Phil Garcia's contribution?
Well, he was a born and raised in Gallup, and for 39 years he volunteered and gave community service on the Planning and Zoning Committee. He outlived many people that worked for the city and retired and went on. You can't say enough about someone that has a passion for their city to dedicate 39 years of service to it. And as a chair, he was so instrumental. He knew more about the land use and all the subdivisions, all the commercial development that's been done in Gallup for decades. He was our go-to man when it came to land use issues. And his passion that he had for music, his passion for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he was such a joy to grow up with, which I got the opportunity to do. Phil and I were the same age, and it was just a great opportunity to grow up with him throughout my life and utilize his knowledge to help me in anything I did. So it was a great loss to the community, and commemorating his, memorializing him with Phil Garcia Court right here when he built his new title company. He really enhanced our downtown and sparked some area, some issues for people to create such new gorgeous buildings that meet the New Mexico landscape. He was always just on the forefront of doing everything for the city and the community. So he's a great man and will be missed greatly.
Thank you so much.
You bet.